Hey everyone, and welcome to the Sunny Go One Piece podcast. On this episode, we're going to be diving into episodes 425, 430, and 431. And yeah, we're jumping around because we had those filler episodes kind of sandwiched in there. But yeah, these will cover manga chapters 528 through 530. And this brings us back to the main story as Luffy finds his way deeper into Impel Downs as he runs into more and more familiar faces in his continued search for Ace. So, synopsis. The final member of the Shichibukai is revealed to us with Jinbei finally being presented, and he has been imprisoned for wanting to stop the war to protect his home and his people. Meanwhile, Luffy has now entered level 2 where he runs into and joins forces with another former foe in Mr. 3 as they all make their way through an army of crazy beasts to get down to level 3. Alright, so differences. There are a lot of differences to talk about, and in quite detail too. I think this is probably the longest differences section I've ever written, but let's get started. So, in episode 425, we get a scene in the anime where Sengoku is notified of Luffy's infiltration into Impel Down, and then goes on to talk about the one person in the past who was able to escape from Impel Down, which is the Golden Lion Shiki, obviously setting up the Little East Blue fillers and the new movie at the same time, which is Strong World. What's strange is there is an actual manga canon version of this almost exact same scene later on that takes place towards the beginning of episode 431. But obviously because the movie didn't coincide with this, they had to basically do the scene twice in the anime. Another thing is in the anime, Jinbei's introduction scene is intercut with Luffy and his gang trying to outrun the beasts, whereas in the manga, we get to see the whole conversation between him and Ace, as well as brief glimpses of the other high-level prisoners on their block, as well as Crocodile. The battle with the Sphinx is a bit longer, and a few things have been altered as well. Notably, the anime opted to not use a few different noodle dishes. Like, they didn't use yakisoba, which is a noodle dish, but it doesn't end in the word men, which is noodle in Japanese. So, in addition, they changed one of the jokes where he doesn't actually say a noodle. So, in the anime, you'll remember the Sphinx throws in their quote cool dude, and Buggy and Mr. 3 think, who, me? And so like a bit of a translator's note with this joke is that cool guy in Japanese is said ikemen, basically how you describe like your prototypical like cool, desired, good looking man. Think like Sasuke. he's usually referred to as like your typical anime ikemen. But ikemen ends in the same suffix, men. But in ikemen's case, it literally just means men, as in like males, which obviously isn't a noodle, but it still sounds like a noodle dish because it ends in the word men, along with all the other dishes that so far the Sphinx has kind of yelled out. And so here's where the difference comes into play. So in the manga, they didn't have this ikemen joke. Instead, they used a different word that had the suffix men, but wasn't a noodle dish. So in the manga, the Sphinx yells out, amen. And so Buggy randomly responds, did he just pray? And so I think they may have changed this to avoid any controversies with sort of the religious aspect of it, because obviously amen or amen is very closely tied to religion. And so maybe they took that out, but I mean, there's a lot of other religious things in One Piece, so I don't know why this one had to be changed, but they did so anyways. Next, there are even more differences concerning the Sphinx's speech later on. Like when they escape Cell Death down in level 3, because the anime makes him briefly change to naming pasta instead of Asian noodles, and then have him suddenly go back to like crispy yakisoba, which is in the manga. But I honestly love the sudden change to pasta, as Mr. 3 and Buggy are commenting on this surprise as well, because you the audience, are always like, what? Pasta now all of a sudden? But I did really like the change that they made with the anime here and adding way more different, like, noodle dishes as well as pasta dishes. The next difference is, after Sengoku is scolding Garp, the final portion where he takes Garp's rice crackers and just scarfs them all down was added in the anime. Originally, in the manga, that scene ended just before he did that. And then another change we see in this portion is, in the manga, we don't actually see Luffy pick up and bite down on the bird that got cooked on its way down once they get to level 3. But in the manga, he's just kind of seen munching down on it later, and we're left to assume that he picked it up as the conversation went along. However, the scene in the anime, it's fine, and it also got a bit of a chuckle out of me when Buggy and Mr. 3 are shocked at this, but I think it's way funnier in the manga as we see the cooked bird is sticking in the ground, and it's not till like a page and a half later we cut back to Luffy in a panel as he responds to Buggy, "Let's go to level 4, and we see him eating the bird, and I think it's funny because it was expected yet unexpected and catches you by surprise and makes you remember that he must have grabbed that bird from like a page and a half ago, and that as they're strategizing on how to survive this sort of desert environment. Whereas the anime, you basically see him pick up the bird, and so there's not really this like surprise comedy that happens with it. You're just kind of like, oh, he's eating the bird. That's kind of funny. I mean, it's still funny in its own way, and it's fine, but I think it hit me a lot harder when I read it in the manga because of how surprising it was that he just picked it up and he's just munching down on it already. And then finally, the last difference we get is that extra scene of Hancock and the others in the elevator. When in the manga, we actually don't get to see them until they reach Ace's cell later on in a future episode. So yeah, that was all the differences that I could find, or at least that I thought significant enough to mention. So let's get into the episodes themselves. Now that they've fallen into level 2, the Beasts of Hell floor, where they will have to fend off hellish animals and beasts, it starts off with a rather innocuous and even cute hippo, but turns out it's a pretty formidable chomping like hippo just eating up Buggy immediately. The next beast they run into is a man-sized praying mantis, but the interesting thing, and I can't remember, but I believe this is the first time we hear that Buggy actually has limits to how much he can be chopped up, because this mantis keeps chopping him up. And I thought that was very interesting, that there are limits to his double proof. I mean, I figured there was, but I didn't realize that it would be what the extent would be. So it doesn't look like Buggy can just be cut up infinitely, which is interesting. One of the funnier parts of this episode is just how casual and almost normal like they're talking, and by normal I mean even more normal than your average One Piece character, but more like how you'd see a regular real person talking, if that makes any sense. It just sounds so plain and casual, and that in a One Piece episode certainly stands out and is funny in and of itself, especially since these two used to beat the living crap out of each other, which is pretty funny. They eventually do run into a true beast as they stumble upon this demented-looking basilisk, but oddly, it predominantly looks more like a chicken than a snake, or with a snake head, than the reverse. And I had to look this up, but apparently there are variations of the mythical creature, the basilisk, where they depict him as a mix of a chicken and a snake, and I was expecting a pure snake version like the one you see in like Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. In the next scene, we finally get to meet the warden, the man in charge of Impel Down, Magellan. And he himself looks like some sort of a beast man himself that pretty much looks like the devil in a jailer's uniform, which is kind of on brand for the theming of all the employees, as we'll see in Impel Down. Now, Magellan has one of the craziest devil fruits with the Doku Doku no Mi, or the poison fruit, or venom venom fruit. The word doku itself can mean poison or venom. However, venom has its own variation called doku eki. And yeah, it's a very strong and dangerous fruit, but I think this is one of my favorite things about Oda's thought process and the level of absurd imagination he has that shines through, especially with Magellan's fruit. In that, because he ate the Doku Doku fruit, he constantly has a case of upset stomach and is forced to sit on the can for 10 hours a day. Like, why the hell does this fruit backfire on him so much? It's so funny. I don't think any other fruit affects them this hard, apart from like the Logia users who are inherently immune to their element. I suppose Foxy is the only one that springs to mind where if the Noronoro beam is fired upon him, he's slowed down too. But honestly, I've always loved this crazy quirk that Magellan has because it makes too much sense. Yet, why would an author give such a badass character you know, and such a badass power set, such a ridiculous weakness. But I love Oda for that, exactly. And in fact, everything about him is poisonous. Even his breaths and farts are poisonous. So, like, the other jailers, they have gas masks, like, prepared for themselves when they're around Magellan. Some quick trivia about Magellan, too, is his name is obviously based on the explorer Ferdinand Magellan, and his favorite foods are unsurprisingly poison soup and fugu sashimi. Fugu being the famous pufferfish sushi, which a lot of sushi restaurants serve, and if not prepared carefully and correctly, can actually poison and kill a consumer. But of course, Magellan loves that since he's all about poison, and that's no concern for him. I think one gag that I don't really resonate with is Hannibal's sort of ambitious slip-ups, like his Freudian slip-ups where he's just states what his ambition is, even to the point where they're like completely undermining Magellan's authority and wanting to sort of supersede him. I don't know. I've always just never found this joke very funny, and it gets really old because it happens so often whenever Hannibal is on screen. Anyways, getting back to the other story, by the time we get back to Luffy and Buggy, Luffy's already defeated the Basilisk, and as a result, all the prisoners in the prison block are released by Buggy in an effort to cause more chaos to hide their tracks, but they all go back in the cells due to the boss of the floor. But it's here we get our next baddie reunion, with Mr. Three offering his services to the pair. Normally, I don't really like it when Toei inserts recaps of old episodes, but it was actually kind of cool to see the events of Little Garden reanimated in the HD widescreen format. And my favorite part is the fact that Luffy doesn't even recognize Mr. Three until he puts his hair back into that three on top, showing just how much emphasis Luffy puts on physical features to remember people, and why he often refers to them by their most prominent features and just nicknames them after that. He's not doing it to sort of spite them or out of disrespect. I think he's literally incapable of remembering people's names without associating it with a very physical attribute of them, which, you know, makes sense and is on brand for Luffy's sort of, I don't want to say dumb, but sort of his simple-mindedness. To end episode 425, there's a brief scene with Sengoku that only in the anime exists, like I mentioned in the differences section, where he learns of Luffy's Impel Down infiltration, and then he goes on to mention that the only person that has ever broken out of that prison, which was Golden Lion Shiki, who happens to be the main villain of the movie Strong World, which was released at this time when it was being aired. Now, like I mentioned in my Strong World review podcast, the events of the movie are non-canon. However, the existence of Shiki and his escape from Impel Downs, as well as a couple other things yet to be revealed about him, are actually canon, and this is expanded upon in the actual canon Chapter 0 from Volume 0, which was specially written by Oda as a special promotion for the movie's release. Shiki himself doesn't really play a role at all in this arc, or really any part in the main story, other than for sort of historical storytelling and giving a little bit more context to a couple things. He's kind of just a fun Easter egg thrown in every now and then when talking about events from the past. Now, skipping ahead back to episode 430, and by skip, I mean just get back on track, if you know, as if the fillers never happened. But at the time, this was really annoying because we all knew that the long-awaited reveal of Jinbei in the anime was coming, and then we had to wait an extra unnecessary month before this episode happened, so it really sucked. But speaking of which, the episodes start off with Jinbei being chained up in the same cell as Ace, and we finally get to see the legendary Jinbei, the second Shichibukai we ever heard of, all the way back in the Baratie Air arc from Yosaku. And his design is so awesome. As his name in Japanese would suggest, he himself is a fishman whale shark, and he is huge. Probably bigger than Arlong, which is saying something, and I love this design. He's got this wide, stocky build like a sumo wrestler, which will play into his fighting style later. And I also love his eyebrows and what I think are his sideburns. They have that sort of that wavy look that many Oni demons sport, which is his entire face, is kind of inspired by. And his bounty is revealed to have been 250 million berries. And yeah, that's about a middle of the pack for the Shichibukai, being higher than like Crocodile and Hancock, but then lower than Doflamingo or Kuma and Moria. Of course, this is kind of meaningless because they stop receiving bounties as soon as they're inducted into the Shichibukais. So, you know, they could have been inducted at any point in their career and doesn't really reflect what their actual bounty would be. Nonetheless, a Fishman Shichibukai has to be pretty strong, and given the size of Shinbei, you gotta admit, he's gonna be pretty strong. Jinbei is actually voiced by a very well-known actor, and you probably will recognize his voice since he's got such a distinct and deep voice as Daisuke Gori. In fact, even just within One Piece, he's already voiced two other supporting characters, including Dory the Giant from Little Garden, as well as Rockstar from the Red-Haired Pirates. He's also probably most famously known for his work as Mr. Satan in Dragon Ball Z, in the Japanese dubs, of course. Sadly, though, much like what happened with Smoker's voice actor, Ginzo Matuo, Daisuke would only voice Jinbei for a handful of episodes before being forced to retire due to loss of vision from diabetes in 2009. And very tragically, about a year later, after suffering from depression over this, he was found having taken his own life at the age of 57. Just a real tragedy, especially from a man that has brought so much joy and entertainment to so many people. And again, I'll just take this opportunity to say that if you are suffering from depression or any sort of mental health crisis, definitely please reach out for professional help or the support of your loved ones. Now getting back to the episode, Jinbei's appearance was actually not all that surprising, but what was really surprising was his demeanor and personality. He's not the ruthless and evil pirate like Arlong or many of the other Shichibukai, but instead a very thoughtful, remorseful, and even empathetic man, which caught me completely off guard. Like, the way he set up with the way Yosaku was describing him was very different from what we got. He wants nothing more than to somehow stop this war and even willing to give up his own life to stop it. Much of the rest of this episode is dedicated to Luffy, Buggy, and Mr. Three hilariously trying to avoid the beast, but I gotta say, this was so surreal seeing these three together on the same side. I remember at the time, each week, I was so excited to see who else would join Luffy from his past, and therein lies the beauty of the length and vastness of One Piece, is that you can have moments like this where so much world building has been created that when you recall things, it's a pretty big deal and a great deal of fun. And the nostalgia that comes along with it is awesome as well. But Oda does it in a way where it's not pandering or forced. Like, he waits until the right time where it makes sense in the story and it's appropriate. Which is why it's been like 8 to 9 years since we've seen these guys with Luffy. The Manticore scene especially is freaking hilarious. Like, how they learn random human phrases and just repeat them. It starts off creepy as hell as they're just yelling phrases that tortured prisoners have yelled out in anguish. But then it takes a very sharp turn to the hilarious in Oda's usual style of absurdity comedy, where they start yelling random things like loincloth and then strawberry panties, with Buggy yelling back, "There's a bunch of dumb things mixed in there." And then there's another manticore that yells out, "Beefsteak!" And he's instantly drawn to it, with Buggy yelling at him, "Don't react!" And the voice actor for the manticore has to be given some props too, because the way he performs the loincloth, strawberry panties is so damn good. The way it's like all deep for the loincloth. Then he lightens up for strawberry panties, like, "Hundashi, hundashi, ichigo panty!" Like, what? Who directed them to say it like this? Is like, it's so funny though. Also, I can't forget the first time Luffy lays eyes on the Sphinx either. How he says, "Lion? Wait, old man?" Because it does look like an old man. And by the time it starts attacking, I lose it because all it's been exposed to are names of noodles for some reason. And the first time it says "Soulman," and your reaction is just like the three characters. I remember when I read this moment for the first time back then, I basically reacted the same way. I was like, "Soulman?" Then when it just starts rattling off noodle after noodle with ramen, tammen, chashu-men, and I just about lost it. I was like dying when I was reading this the first time. Also, when they fall down to level 3, you can hear the Sphinx yelling out, "Sorry noodles," which makes absolutely no sense in English, which is lost in translation. But in Japanese, I think a lot of people will know that sorry is gomen, which is another word that ends in the suffix men. So it's like he's saying a noodle, but it works because it's another like word with the men suffix. But yeah, this whole exchange with the manticore and the sphinx and the noodles, oh my god, I was dying with this scene. It was so funny. Now getting back to a little bit more serious stuff, returning back to Jinbei and Ace, we get to learn more about Jinbei himself and his relation to Whitebeard. And I think this is why I don't like how this was intercut, because you have like this serious scene where Jinbei is very desperate mixed in with this like ridiculous comedy. And I like how in the manga, you get to experience this entire scene in one go, then you get to go see what happens with Luffy. And so you don't get this like tonal whiplash. And I think that's one thing. Well, it doesn't hurt the anime necessarily. I think it's just done better in the manga because of how the pacing goes. But I ultimately think it was changed around because of the fact that they wanted the episode to end on a certain point, whereas the chapters just don't match up. But anyways, like I was saying earlier, I think most of our collective expectation of Jinbei were incredibly off, as he seems like an upstanding guy that is even... He's a pirate that hates other pirates for what they've done to his home of Fishman Island. And it's here you really start to see where all the story threads starting to come together. And again, like with Arlong, Hachi, Sabori, the Celestial Dragons, the slave trafficking, Hancock, Fisher Tiger, Whitebeard, and Ace, like all of these coming together, it's like, it's just amazing the interconnectedness of all these seemingly separate story elements and characters that were all meant to build up to this impending conflict. Like it left me in awe, like when I realized what was actually happening here and what's still yet to come. It's quite incredible how Oda juggles so many different story threads and then seemingly merges them all perfectly. It's quite incredible how often he does this, but when it does happen, you're just like, holy crap. Like, it really makes you go back and appreciate the earlier stuff. Like I've mentioned in the past, like Oda's sort of revelations retroactively makes the past events even better. Although it kind of makes you wonder. And there were theories at the beginning of the series, Oda may have actually wanted Jinbei as a villain, but then pivoted, which is why his first mention differed so heavily from his appearance. And these suspicions would actually be proven correct, as years later in the One Piece Vivera Card Visual Dictionary books, it goes on to explain that Jinbei was actually going to be a villain that was kind of controlling Arlong from the shadows, as well as being merged with another character idea that he put... But I won't mention the specifics of that other character because it is pretty major spoilers. It's never really stated why he pivoted, but to me it seems like the Jinbei we got fit the story better about the fish, you know, fish people being sympathetic victims of the great pirate age and the world government. And this backstory would go on to explain why Jinbei joined the Shichibukai, as his people were being abducted and killed as a result of the Great Pirate Age, and he wanted protection from the world government, as well as he'd also eventually get help from Whitebeard's influence and protection, which just goes to show just how badass and powerful Whitebeard is as a Yonko. Like, that his mere name and declaration is enough to prevent people from messing with his territory. It's for this very reason that Jinbei can't have Whitebeard die in this world, but Jinbei still has hope. And this is the first time where you really start to think that, yeah, Jinbei is going to be a good guy, other than the spoiler in the opening theme, Kaze wo Sagashite, where you see him fall alongside Luffy. So it's kind of already spoiled there, which is unfortunate. But I mean, I think right here, at least in the manga, is when I was like, I think Jinbei might actually end up teaming up with Luffy once he gets down there. Then we get the long-awaited return of my favorite villain among the other prisoners, and we hear Crocodile's voice as someone who wants to kill Whitebeard himself, and ooh, man, do I love hearing that voice. I think the series is just better with Crocodile in it, and I'm so glad he's returning in some form. And I remember how excited I was to see him back. Like, I was going nuts when this was first revealed. I mean, because, like, I had already basically predicted that he was going to be beat down there with them, and that there's no way that Oda was going to pass up the opportunity to reintroduce Crocodile again. Now, moving on to the final episode. Unfortunately, much of episode 431 is dedicated to recapping things just to stretch time, but we again hear the mention of Golden Lion Shiki being the only other person to have disgraced Impel Down after escaping, which is the first time, actually, when you think about it, a movie character was inserted into the canon of the main story. And this isn't even a line of dialogue added in the anime after the fact to cross-promote the movie. This specific line actually appears in manga chapter 530, so Oda definitely sort of planned all this out, because one of the more significant trivia about Strong World is that this is the first movie that Oda actually had a hand in writing, or at least he had a hand in creating the concept and the overall story. Of course, in this scene, I love Garp's happy-go-lucky, blasé attitude about something so serious, but he's in a disappointed way, kind of also proud of how much chaos his grandson has caused while he munches away at his senbei or rice crackers. However, there is one curious fact that arises from Sengoku scolding Garp, is the fact that he won't reprimand him based on his status as a marine hero, and we don't know what he did yet. He must have done something amazing to earn that title and this level of prestige that Sengoku the Fleet Admiral can't even touch him. Of course, we've heard that Garp is a great marine hero, but we don't yet know what he actually did to earn this title. But by this point, at least I kind of had a different inkling. Like, all the different facts have started to blend together for me, especially since by this point in the story, on my first run through, I had long since guessed why he was a hero, and I mean, it's pretty obvious that he's the one that could go toe-to-toe with Roger, and it was reported that he was the one that captured him. Of course, through Rayleigh, we know that that was a false narrative that the world government wanted to peddle, when in reality, Roger turned himself in. But definitely, Garp and Roger's sort of history go hand in hand. Of course, we won't learn exactly what earned him that title till much later. And obviously, what I thought was pretty obvious turned out to be kind of wrong in a sense, as we'll learn with the, I don't know if saying that one island incident. Just to avoid spoilers, I'll keep it at that. But also, in regarding sort of Sengoku and Garp's relationship, I don't for one second believe that Sengoku truly means anything he says, because I always thought that they're actually really close friends, and this is more of an empty threat, and he's just kind of venting his frustration at Garp's annoying family. And you can clearly see that in their banter and how Sengoku pettily takes Garp's rice crackers and just kind of scarfs them all down, almost out of like this brotherly spite. I really get the sense that yes, Sengoku is technically Garp's superior, but I feel like their relationship is more so that they're so close and they're so buddy-buddy that the rank really doesn't even matter. To be quite honest, it seems like they're both on the same level. Moving right along, after which we finally get back to what happened to our band of misfits as they fell down to level 3, and this is the Starvation Hell level. And it seems to be a desert of some kind, and I love that little detail we find out about Paramecia Devil Fruits, is that natural elements can affect the users pretty greatly, as well as their abilities. Of course, we know how Logia Fruits and their users have natural counters like sand with liquids or lightning with rubber, but we see here that not only can Mr. 3 not effectively produce wax because it melts away instantly, but that he himself is more susceptible to heat and further weakened by it compared to Luffy and Buggy, who possess devil fruits as well, but have no inherent weakness to heat per se. Just kind of a cool detail that further fleshes out the concept of devil fruits and their effects on the users. Looking back at this scene and the scene in the manga, the anime's geography of this level is very strange, and it's not really clear between the two. And what I mean by this is the anime depicts that they fell down into this open desert area and they walk around in a circle through the stone cell block area. only to end up back in the desert. But in the manga, while it's not 100% clear, I always got the sense that they initially fell into the stone corridor with the cell block, and they never moved. It kind of a, you know, strange, insignificant detail, but again, something else I noticed is just really weird. And I guess it makes better sense in the anime why Saldeath was able to set up the trap, since he had time while the trio were walking in a circle, whereas in the manga, that would mean that he already would have had the trap set there, even though there was no way of knowing that they would land there, since they broke through the floor and not like an established exit to or entrance down to level 3. So I think maybe that's why they altered this scene slightly. But again, it's not also very clear in the manga either, the geography of what this place is. And speaking of Saldeath, it's here we meet the chief guard of Impel Down, who follows the sort of the theming of the other employees as being very devil-like. But he's more of like a devil imp looking thing. And we also get a funny exchange between Luffy and him right off the bat because of Japanese wordplay here. So a bit of translator's note. The way you say Saldeath's name in Japanese would be Sarudesu. But if you separate the two words Saru and Desu, you get Saru, which is monkey, and Desu, which is the verb for is. So when he says his name is Sarudesu, it sounds like he's saying is a monkey, or grammatically in Japanese, he's saying I'm a monkey. And that's why Luffy responds, hey, you sure don't look like one. And Saldeath continuously tries to correct him, only to keep sounding like he's saying, I'm a monkey, I'm a monkey. Also, another fun fact about Saldeath is that, like many of the other main cast members, since their characters are not around to actually give them some voice work during these arcs, he's actually played by none other than Kazuya Nakai, who voices Zoro. And you can clearly tell it's him. It's just he's pitched his voice up a little bit and made it more nasally. And like I mentioned in the differences section, I love that they get a bit more mileage out of the noodles gag with the Sphinx here, with it swapping to pasta out of nowhere, then back to noodles. And then Buggy and Mr. Three attempt to abandon Luffy, but Luffy, the ever optimist, just gets them with the literal personification of the phrase, kill them with kindness, as he naively, cheerfully thanks them for helping him up till now. And it's the sincerity that hurts their hearts, and it's kind of funny to see that. And you kind of get the sense that, yes, these guys were villains, but they're not pure evil. And yeah, I think Oda kind of takes care to make sure that, yes, they're very terrifying when they're initially introduced as villains, but he doesn't make them do, like, overtly, like, terrible things, which he will grant that kind of trait to future villains, and Lucci is a good example of that. But I like that, like, the more comedic villains, like Mr. Three and Buggy, are still able to be redeemed. I guess redeemed is not the right word, but be more palatable as, like, anti-heroes or, you know, somewhat temporary allies. Anyways, to close off this set of episodes, we get to leave off on another tease of the next inmate that we'll get reintroduced to and will no doubt join forces with Luffy, and that is Bonkrai. And oh man, I'm so excited for this because Bonkrai is so amazing in this arc. So yeah, definitely want to talk about that. But the next episode, I believe, we're going to try and record a review episode for the live action One Piece series that just recently premiered on Netflix. So look forward to that. But if you did enjoy this, send me a like or comment. And if you want to join me on this journey of rewatching One Piece, please consider subscribing. Check out my Instagram and Twitter/X account at SunnyGoPodcast for updates of when I post new episodes and to see pictures of my manga collection. As always, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to listen to my podcast. I just have a small spoiler section, nothing too major. But if you're not interested in any of that, stay safe out there, and I hope to see you on the next episode. Bye! Okay, so spoiler section, nothing too major, but I did want to mention when this portion, when I first ran into Jinbei here, I honestly didn't know what to expect from his character. So when you find out that he's actually a good guy and that he'll kind of join forces with Luffy, I did not expect Jinbei to be such a big part of the series to the point where he basically becomes a Straw Hat. And it is really crazy the looking back on these episodes and then seeing Jinbei now as a full-fledged Straw Hat member in Egghead Island. It's crazy to think about. But he fits so well. I love Jinbei. Jinbei is such a unique character in the Straw Hat crew because, A, he's incredibly sort of like honorable, and he's just like kind of like he almost has like a dad-like quality of the crew. Like he watches over them, mentors Luffy essentially, and really like has his back. Like he's a very like I don't know how to describe it, because like he's kind of like Luffy's support. It's really cool what Oda has done with Jinbei. Like I alluded to in the non-spoiler section, Jinbei, what we got, the Jinbei that we ended up with, is actually an amalgamation of the original concept of Jinbei, sort of the villain version of Jinbei that was controlling Arlong from the shadows, as well as kind of being this sort of mortal enemy to Ace, apparently. To then, he combined him with another concept character that was going to be the helmsman of the Straw Hats called Saigo. And he was apparently like a friend to Zoro. And then basically he just combined them together. So we got the fishman Jinbei, who becomes the Straw Hat helmsman, which is a very interesting idea. And yeah, I ultimately really liked what we got, because Jinbei is definitely one of my favorite characters. I mean, all the Straw Hats are, but I think Jinbei particularly, like, I feel drawn to him just because of how calming of a presence he is. And he has this sort of regality to him too, being a Shichibukai as well as a former captain of a very prolific pirate crew, and being someone that was able to somewhat control Arlong for a little while. Like, sort of that reverence that you have for Jinbei, it's just kind of wild to me that he's on the Straw Hats. It's just crazy. The other thing I kind of wanted to sort of touch upon is, I mean, it's not really any groundbreaking commentary, but I just really like the idea of how Luffy goes on to replace Whitebeard as the protector of Fishman Island. Because of Whitebeard's death, you know, Fishman Island becomes a lot more susceptible to attacks and to pirates. And with the world government turning their back on Jinbei as well, now that he's no longer a Shichibukai, it leaves it vulnerable. But then Luffy, obviously in Fishman Island, declares that Fishman Island is now under the protection of him. And then eventually he'll become a Yonko himself, which adds even further weight, as well as the fact that he's now got a grand fleet that he can spread across the seas, even though he doesn't really control the grand fleet. They just kind of do their own thing. But he has that might to back it up now. And I just think that parallel is so freaking cool. And just seeing sort of that growth of Luffy from here, where Jinbei is talking about how he talks about Jinbei and sort of the reverence he has for Jinbei. And then that same status is now where Luffy is at now as a Yonko himself. And yeah, it's just kind of crazy the journey that Luffy goes on and seeing the growth that all these characters and all these story threads go through. And it's probably one of the funnest things about One Piece, to be honest. Anyways, that's pretty much all I wanted to talk about in the spoiler section. So I hope you enjoyed that. And until we meet again on the next episode, see ya!